It's The Bill Murphy Show. A daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
It's the daily digital broadcast that lives by the motto that everybody has a story. That is the idea. So if you want to be a guest on a future show, get in touch with me via email at murph@BillMurphyShow.com, and we will get you on. Before we bring on today's guest, I want to say thanks to a lot of people that have been giving me some very positive feedback about the show. Looking at the numbers, it's pretty amazing to see that we've got people from like 14 different countries tuning in, albeit very small numbers, but still impressive nonetheless. There's even, I saw 22 people logging on from the what's called the Russian Federation now, but they have 0 kilobytes of usage. So it looks like people are getting onto the site from Russia, but not being able to access any of the audio. So keep trying. And everybody else from all those various countries, there's even countries I can't even pronounce on there. So it's very impressive stuff. And we're just getting going and some exciting things planned for the future. But we want to get right to today's guest as I bring on another very old friend of mine. Ooh, sorry to use the word old. A longtime friend of mine who is going to bring some interesting stuff to the table today, just like we get out of all our guests. But I think this is going to be a little more unusual than we've been used to up to this date. My old friend, my good friend, Gary Wayne is joining me. Gary, thanks for calling me.
That's okay, Bill. You can use the word old.
Here we are, both wearing glasses, getting in the latter days of our lives, but we go back a long way.
Yeah. And
normally we do music on Fridays, but we're going to be doing a little bit of music today because I need to start off this interview by letting the listeners know that you were one of the earliest influences I had musically as a kid, and I mean literally a kid. There was a rock and roll club on 441 called Rock Casino, and I was only 17 years old. And I know I'm giving away by saying what year this was, 1979, and I snuck in there with, I guess I had a fake ID, or got in with, I don't know, upon approval of some mutual friends of ours.
The Rock Casino, all you needed was a word.
That's it. Oh, yeah, there was a password. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, the password was I'm 18.
And they didn't care. They didn't even like put anything on your wrist or anything. But in any case, I went in there with my boys. I was putting together a band called Figment at the time, and our guitar player lived right down the street from there, and we came from a rehearsal, and it was even on a school night, I think, and we went in there to see a band called Pearl playing. And I remember sitting at a table there drinking a vodka and tonic, because I thought that was cool to be having a vodka and tonic at 17, watching you guys do some Led Zeppelin songs. And I remember gazing up at that stage going, man, I really want to do this too. But I didn't know how I was going to, you know, do what you were doing. You were belting out the Led Zeppelin songs. You guys were. Talk a little bit about Pearl, because I know I want to be refreshed on who was in that band with you, and give me a little bit of history on how that started, because you guys were at the forefront of the local music scene down here at the time.
Yeah, well, Pearl, we got together at, we were all about 16. We had one member of the band that was 18, so it's pretty much the same story as when you guys got together, because you guys got together very young. As a matter of fact...
Well, just for the record, it was a few years sooner, because you're a little bit older than I am.
Just a little bit, yeah, that's right. But I'm an old friend.
That's right.
And as a matter of fact, once we were together for like about 6 or 7 years, and we were playing at the Agora, there was everybody running up to me and telling me, hey, there's a new Pearl. There's a new Pearl coming out, and they're called Figment. And I'm like, I got to see these guys, right? But we started, you know, as young as, like when you guys started, and the whole thing that kind of got us on our way was we had that She 7-Eleven rock contest. Do you remember that?
No, I actually was probably right before my time, but do tell.
I will tell. There was a She 7-Eleven rock contest. She got together with the Midnight Special, and the Midnight Special, the winner got to go on the Midnight Special. And then the second prize was to go on a cruise and to get some recording time, and then the third prize was to open up a major concert for Cellar Door.
Cool.
Cellar Door, there's some memories right there.
Love it.
Now, we wanted third prize. That's what we wanted.
Right, right. That sounds like the coolest prize of all.
Didn't it, right?
Yeah.
So what we did was we auditioned for it. Out of 600 bands, we got to be one of the 24 bands that went to Lakeland with another band called Tight Squeeze.
Okay. Remember them well.
That's right. We went up there. We played. We came in third. And at that point, we were going to make it. We were going to make it. We came in third out of 600 bands. Thank you very much. We're Pearl. This, that, blah, 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 blah. So then we just continued to play the club circuits down here, and we started working for the agencies in the area and touring, I guess, what you would say, touring the Florida club scene. We were working with Wally Voss, of course.
The great Wally Voss.
The great Wally Voss, and then Tom Palapoli was with us also. But then Wally, one day, he was asking to borrow my car, and then the very next day, he's waving goodbye to me in the back of a limousine with Yngwie Malmsteen.
There you go.
Right? So Wally is a great story in itself.
So Pearl got to be like a training camp for people on their way to the big time.
Yeah, that's almost.
And you had a great drummer named Chuck Doty playing drums for you.
Chuck Doty.
Wow.
Chuck Doty's still around, still kicking him out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he was, I think there was another contest that he was in where he came in third, or no, he came in...
I think he won that one.
Yeah.
The one at the Button South or the Agora at the time?
Right, well, he won that one, but there was one for the whole country that I think he came in, like, fifth or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, I mean, it's like Steve. You know,
right.
Your brother. There are certain drummers that just stick out that are just a style of their own and a place of their own.
Yeah, and you know, only a few of them. And again, you know, we were spoiled because you got to play in front of Chuck. I got to play a good deal of my early career in front of my brother Steve. They're two of the finest drummers I know of anybody out there. And there's just something about that to have that confidence, knowing that they're going to be on top of everything. You don't even have to look back. No hand signals necessary. And it's just a real treat to play in front of someone like that.
Right. So the heart beating at the same time.
Right. Exactly.
You know, that camaraderie, that brotherly
mm-hmm.
communication that you have with a band member sometimes is, I mean, I envy the fact that you had that with your brother and a bandmate. I mean, that must have been, how much closer can you get?
No, I know. And it gives it one more degree of advantage having the brother connection there. Although that did, you know, that has its ups and downs too, because you get that sibling rivalry going, and it led to a few nice backstage altercations, should we say.
I read about that in Who Books, right?
Right. On a much smaller scale, but you know, we did some damage in some dressing rooms before. That's good stuff, man. It was just such a vivid memory for me, and you know, hitting the high notes. And I know I wasn't properly trained. I mean, I did take the occasional voice lesson here and there, but I did not. I really self-taught. I think you probably had a little bit more formal training than I did.
Well, I was in musical theater for a while.
Okay, that helps.
So I did take, you know, voice lessons and stuff like that. But then Robert Plant jumped into my life, and that was
right.
A whole different story. But you know something, not to blow your horn or anything like that, but the problem that I had is that I sounded so much like Plant that when I did Boston, it sounded like Robert Plant singing Boston.
Right.
And when I did Journey, it sounded a little bit like Robert Plant singing Journey. When you got up, when we finally did see Figment and you guys started playing, you were able to do the Plant songs and you were able to hit the Plant notes, but when you did something else, I mean, you would go from... This was great, man. You would go from...
Night Ranger to Led Zeppelin, right.
Night Ranger to Led Zeppelin, and then you would go into Low Spark or High Heel Boys.
Right, right, right.
You know, I mean, great, you know, so you instead of having to unlearn yourself, you took pieces of people and built your own style, which was good, which is really cool.
Well, this was a great idea to have you on today. This is awesome.
Well, that's it. Okay, the rest is all about me.
Absolutely. And it's been an interesting transformation for you, although I know you can't get music out of your blood and you're still doing a lot of music. You have made an interesting turn onto a side road here lately that we're going to get into. But again, let's just get a little more biographical before we get into your current activities. You grew grew up in South Florida? You're not a native Floridian, are you?
No, I was in New York till I was 15 years old.
The same story with me. Wow, interesting.
15?
15, exactly. The summer before sophomore year, we moved to Fort Lauderdale.
You know, our lives parallel quite a bit, Bill.
That is.
That's scary.
Kind of a little freaky, yeah. What part of New York?
Yonkers, New York, the Bronx.
How come we never had this conversation? It seems like we grew up a few miles away from each other. I was in Mount Vernon, East Chester.
Mount Vernon. I could take a bus there.
Exactly. So.
No kidding. Wow, that's crazy.
Absolutely crazy.
Well, good. That's why we both wipe our nose the same way.
And yeah, we got a few other things in common that we can't talk about. No, but that's a whole other story. But that's interesting. So then you came down here and you attended school where?
Plantation High School.
Oh, so did I. Wow. And you graduated 4 years earlier than I did, I think. So.
Well, I would have.
Oh, okay. Now, we don't want to get into that then, do we? Rock and roll took over at some point.
Rock and roll took over. I was on the road at 17.
Yeah, and so you guys weren't only doing covers, though. You were doing your own stuff, and how close did it get? Because I don't know how parallel our lives run with this part of it, but how close was it? I mean, did you guys have some correspondence with record labels and get close to getting signed?
Yeah, we did. In a way, we had this guy managing us that he basically had another band in mind. So he was kind of using us to get our following in to see his choice band.
I got you.
His band of choice, and it all stemmed from that contest that we talking about earlier. So, you know, they picked us up and they promised this and promised that, and we did a couple of Tax Shelter albums and they wanted us to do that. And then we have these incredible songs by Scott Reddish.
Okay.
You know, who was the guitar player for Pearl originally before Jeff Lawrence joined the band. And when he left the band, he just kind of took his whole concept with him and his originals and everything like that. And we got Jeff, and none of us was as strong a writer as Scott. Scott was great.
Right.
I mean, he just had this whole concept planned out of my brother and marketing and how record companies market things. He just had this brilliant scheme. You know, he was comparing the music business to fast food business. You know, he was just very, very innovative, way, way ahead of his time.
Wow.
And he left the music business for a while and went out to Texas for a little while and just raised a family, passed recently, but he's just immortal. And he's playing with Hendrix and Lennon, and he's blowing them away, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great stuff. What a great piece of history that is. And it's sad to see that the music scene is just not the same as it was back there. There was a dozen places you could go to and just see awesome bands any night of the week. And it's sad to see that those days are way behind us. So.
Yeah, it is. It is a shame because it was great. So many great bands at that time. There's so many great bands, and you can go to in a band, you could actually make a living.
Yeah, actually you could. There was a period of time there, probably a stretch of 2 years, that we, you know, we're playing a good number of nights a week and actually taking home a decent amount of money, and it sure beat it working for a living. So
yeah, and you know what was great about that also is that you would go to a club and you'd play for the week.
Right.
You'd set up your equipment the beginning of the week, and you wouldn't have to touch it.
That's the best part. That's why I'm not doing it that much now, because I just hate the loading in and loading out part. At this point, I would probably pay somebody all of my money for the evening just to load the gear in and out and sing for free, you know?
Yeah, isn't that the whole thing behind it is that we're still playing, but we're not doing it for the money.
Right, never. I never was doing it for the money, but that's beside the point. Now we've turned this into a music edition, for we spent almost half the show talking about music, and the idea was to get into what you're into now, and you are into hypnosis. How did this start? I've seen a couple of YouTube videos. You're doing this these performances on stage where you bring people up, and, you know, of course, when you see it, it looks like it's fixed. Yeah, I know that it's not, but tell me a little bit about how you got into this in the first place.
Well, yeah, you know, it's not fixed, and it's an incredibly great form of science. It's endorsed by the Medical Association. It's a science that is, what it does is it's basically It's defined as entering into an ultra state of concentration or magnified concentration on a subconscious level.
Okay.
While you're in a hypnotic state, a person is susceptible to accepting subconscious suggestions that can be integrated into, like, everyday behaviors.
Wow.
You know, it enhances a person's ability to achieve specific goals in life. So in other words, hypnotherapy can make it possible for you to reprogram your biocomputer. And that's what I like to refer to, is your mind as a biocomputer. And the way I got into it was we were in Hawaii. My wife and I were in Hawaii, and Amy wanted to get a picture in front of this waterfall. So this guy had asked if we would take his picture, he'd take my picture. It turns out that this guy was a hypnotist. He was telling me about books he read. So I started talking to him about it, and the very next day, after I told him I was interested and I took his card, I saw him on the other side of the Hawaiian island, and we just ran into each other again.
Okay.
To me, something like that is a little bit, you know, freaky.
Sort of like it was meant to be.
Right. So I got to talking to him again, and then we just talked for a little while, and then I kept getting in touch with him, and finally I said, you know, I got this entertainment company. Doing hypnosis would be a great form of entertainment. And I was just thinking about stage hypnosis at the
right,
time.
Right, right.
So I went and I trained with this guy one-on-one for 12 hours a day for a week, right?
Wow, you were in Hawaii for a long time then.
Well, actually, we came back, and he lived in California. So
okay.
I went to California just to study with this guy. I stayed at his house. He got people from Craigslist to come over that never been hypnotized before that we can hypnotize. He gave me books. So he worked with me for like 12 hours a day, and the rest of the time I read and slept, learning the whole basis behind hypnosis. And it's really incredible. So instead of just becoming this stage hypnotist, I actually got into hypnotherapy.
Wow.
And learning emotional replacement therapy, which is taking a bad habit that you have that is trapped into your subconscious mind, removing it, and then replacing it with positive reinforcement.
Okay.
Which is great.
I did. Okay. Now, I'm not gonna, you know, play the ultimate devil's advocate with you or anything, but I will share with you that in 1990, I think, I was at a radio station. We had a client that was into hypnotherapy,
mm-hmm.
and it was one of those quit smoking programs. And as a member of the morning show, they wanted me to do live commercials for it, so they gave me a session to go in and go under the hypnotherapy to quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
I went there. I can pretty much remember being conscious of the entire session. I tried what I thought was hard enough to get under the influence of this doctor. I just don't know if the guy really rubbed me the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty much aware of the whole thing, remained a devil's advocate the whole time, and pretty much lit one up on the way home and wrote it off as, you know, just complete BS. Now,
right.
where did that go wrong? Was that just me not being willing enough to relax and concentrate enough to let it work?
I can tell you, yeah. Well, first of all, when you're conscious, that's part of the hypnotic state.
Okay.
You need to be conscious, because if you're not conscious and you don't hear everything that he's saying, then you're asleep and
okay.
it's not working. What happens is your brainwave frequencies are dropped. Your levels are dropped. You have a beta, alpha, theta, and delta state in your brainwave frequencies, and you drop the beta and the alpha states. I know it's normally alpha and beta, but that's not how it works this way. It's beta, alpha, theta, and delta. Your brainwave frequencies go down, and then it opens up to where you have complete relaxation, so you can open up and be very receptive and accept the things that are being, for lack of a better word, planted in your subconscious mind.
Okay.
So you are conscious, and a lot of people don't realize that you are conscious, so that when they come out of the hypnotic state, they go, oh, well, you know, I was aware of everything that you were saying, so I must not have gotten under.
Okay, well, that's where my mistake was in describing that. So.
Right, and a lot of people, another thing is, when you're going into hypnosis is like Brussels sprouts, you know? I mean, if you don't taste them, you don't know whether or not you like them, so you're scared of them.
Or lima beans in my case. Right. Okay.
Okay.
Excellent.
Right. Okay. And you're afraid of it. You don't want to go near it, you know?
Right.
And it's nothing that can trap you or anything like that. So when people start to get hypnotized, they analyze it.
Right.
They
right.
don't let themselves relax.
Right.
And if you don't let yourself relax, you're not going to go into it.
Well, you're completely describing what I went through because I did exactly that while it was happening. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I got myself I was hypnotized years back, and I didn't make it to my car. Between the office and my car, I lit up.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but this guy, what he did was he turned the light off and he put a tape on. What I do is I like to explain.
You know what? I think that's exactly what this guy did, too. I think the light went down and he played some recording. Yeah, maybe we went to the same doctor. Who knows?
Well, you know, the way our lives have run, I wouldn't doubt it.
I guess you're right. I guess I use the word doctor loosely, but anyway.
Well, yeah, a lot of doctors, you know, like to dabble in hypnosis, but that's what they're doing. They're dabbling.
Right.
They're not really going into it. What I like to do is I like to explain the whole process. I like to let people know exactly what hypnosis is, what you're supposed to feel, that you're not going to go into this magical time.
Or, okay.
Yeah, and like 1 second you're hypnotized, and then the next second, 1 second you're conscious, and the next second you're hypnotized. It doesn't work that way. It's like a soup simmering. You slowly go into this. Have you ever, you slowly go into this relaxed state of mind. So what's happening is your conjunctive consciousness is being set aside, and you're utilizing your subconscious mind to get this magnified relaxation and concentration.
You're using a lot of big words, Gary.
Well, I've got it all written down on the side of my shirt.
But you're doing it well. I must add there. So. But, where can we see this show take place that you do? Where is this and what is it based on? What else happens during the show that you go to?
Well, the show that I do sometimes I work at sometimes I do it at the New York Comedy Club in Boca Raton, which I don't understand that title of a club.
Well,
anyway,
let's face it, Boca Raton is Southern New York. So.
It's the New York of Florida.
That's exactly right.
And I'm going to be doing it at a place called the Cafe. Molino.
Okay.
That's it's off of 10th Street, but I'll let you know as soon as I get these upcoming dates because they're right now off season, of course.
Do keep me posted for sure. Oh yeah, so it's a little slower, a lot less tourists during the summer, so I'm sure it's heavier during the season for you.
Right, but I will do fundraisers. I mean, if it's for a charitable organization and it's a good charitable organization, I'll do it for free.
Good for you, man.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love to do that. I mean, it's great entertainment, and if I can do it for a fundraiser, if I can bring in some money, then, you know, if anybody out there is listening and they want to do that, it's no charge.
Get hypnotized for Haiti or something like that.
Hypnotized for Haiti, right. and it's great. Like, the other day, I did a show, and during the show, I had a lady forget that there was anything in between 5 and 7. So when she counted her fingers, she came up with 11.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's great. I mean, it's really a crazy, crazy thing. I had this one guy, he was a very small guy. I told him he was the strongest guy in the world. He could lift anything that was put in front of him. But I told him that there was a pencil in the middle of the floor that weighed 5,000 pounds.
Okay.
And he couldn't lift it up.
Wow.
He couldn't lift the pencil up off the floor. He just couldn't do it. So I got a little girl out of the audience, and I said, hand him that pencil, will you? So she goes over, she picks up the pencil, and she hands it to him. And he looks at her, and he grabs the pencil, and boom, right down it went.
Oh, wow. So where do you come up with these ideas on what kind of twisted things to put your subjects through?
Well, you know, it's a lot of stuff I learned from Tom Silver, who is the gentleman that I learned from. Tom Silver, he's been on TV, I think, more than any other hypnotist. I think besides Kreskin or something like that. Kreskin just
was know. Kreskin actually a hypnotist?
Yeah, he's a hypnotist and a mentalist
and a weirdo.
And he still is.
And I know he's still doing his thing. No, bless his heart. We all remember. And you know what? We're giving away our age because I'm sure 80% of everybody listening to us has no idea who Kreskin is. But
no! I read books.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I read books.
Yeah, you know of him, right? You didn't actually watch him do his stuff on Merv Griffin or anything.
No, it was Houdini I watched.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked briefly before we did this, and you mentioned the possibility of being able to put me under a hypnosis over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is possible?
Yeah, it is.
I guess it really comes down to whether I think it's possible or not, though.
Yeah, you would have to be committed. The basic thing is you have to do everything that I tell you to do instantly, automatically, without thinking about it.
All right, well, here's where the problem lies, I think. And I mean, I've got this console in front of me, and I've got the timeline ticking. I've got the track recording. I'm doing the show. I'm keeping an eye on 9 different things. I'm just wondering if my paranoia of, you know, falling out of normal consciousness and just letting this tape roll for an hour and a half with nothing going on is going to happen. Is that going to affect my ability to concentrate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you see, you need to be totally free of any kind of stress or worry or any kind of, right. Well, I could still do it over the phone with you.
Right.
But if you didn't have all that going on.
Yeah, right. I you know, and to be fair, I do probably have too much going on here to be able to allow myself to be influenced for that. Plus, I'm just freaked out by it. That's all. Let's just face it.
But, you know, you can't get stuck in it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can open up your eyes at any time. Hypnosis doesn't take control of you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You let it. What you're doing is you're basically hypnotizing yourself. I'm just guiding you.
Gotcha.
So you with that, you can open up your eyes at any time. If I was to put you under, and let's say you're in a deep state of hypnosis, and then I say, okay, Bill, when you wake up, you're going to give me your wallet and tell me to take out all the money in it, and then you're going to continue to do that every week. At that point of time, you can open up your eyes and you can say, get out of here.
I see. So there is a necessary willingness on the part of the subject.
Right. You're not going to do anything that you normally wouldn't do.
Right.
But on stage, when it comes to the hypnosis on stage, people will do what they normally won't do on a stage, but not morally.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? It takes away their inhibitions so that they could be outgoing. They could be creative. They can be imaginative.
Right.
You know, the shyest girl in the world that would never dance in front of anybody will do a ballet on stage.
Wow, that's great.
If I ask her to. It's really good. And then after I take her out of it, she'll go under a lot easier so that if she wants to be a dancer, I can put that suggestion into her mind and make it easier for her to do public speaking, for instance, or to dance in front of people.
That's fantastic. So, okay, so where can people, again, find out where you're going to be performing this and also find out more about it, or actually recruit you for an event or something like that? Is there a website they can go to?
Absolutely. It is S Florida, S as in Sam, Florida. You spell out the whole word, DJ. As in DJ.
Okay.
.com.
Okay.
So it's sfloridadj.com. It's a whole entertainment company. That's why I took the hypnosis in the first place, is just to do hypnotic shows for my entertainment company.
Right.
But it just turned out to be clinical hypnotherapy. And if anybody has a phobia, you know, I helped a lady that was had a fear of driving. Another lady was a fear of going into elevators.
Hmm.
This other guy has a lot of stress in his life, so I helped him to deal with a couple of... You see, life is a miracle, and you got to embrace that miracle every day with this positive attitude.
Yeah.
And I can help you with this obstacle that is blocking the freedom in your life.
Hmm. Well, there's a few things that I should probably have you work on for me. That'd be awesome. So people can check that out and keep track of you, but that the story doesn't end there. And like I said, this show is all about everybody's story. Everybody has a story, and the hypnosis, the music history that you and I have together, the legacy that you've left in South Florida as a musician that everybody remembers from way back when, it doesn't end there. You're also working in the airline industry at this point in time, right? You are doing some stuff for JetBlue. Are you still doing that?
JetBlue, baby. That's me. I'm
the greatest airline to come down the pike in the last 15 years. Easily.
Oh, you know it, man. I'm telling you, they're a good airline.
And what do you do for them?
I'm a liaison for the under the wing. So you're, you know, I teach people, you know, how to bring a plane in, how to push it out, throw in bags, clean in labs, which is the most elegant part of the job.
Oh.
Or just flush in the labs.
You're
don't clean the labs.
Showing them how to do that. You don't act, well, okay. So.
Oh, I had to do it for a while.
Well, you know.
But it's just a hose and a pair of gloves, you know what I mean?
It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, but the benefits are wonderful.
Oh, no, I can imagine. And it's just a great company. They started out, when they first started out with all this fantastic customer service and the great experience on the airplane, and I started flying with them when they first came out, I was immediately skeptical going, how long is this going to last? And it still lasts. Everything that they stood for back then, they still do. And, I mean, I've rarely had a late flight flying them, and I don't think there's a more comfortable way to fly, you know, regular coach in the entire industry.
No, there isn't. There isn't. They don't want to fill up seats. I mean, they don't want to fill up planes. They want to fill up seats.
Right.
You know, it's a good airline.
Absolutely.
Really,
and they're supposed to be, and they're still adding more cities every day, right? Or every year, anyway.
Yep. They got they call them blue cities.
Ah. Very cool. And each plane has its own name and so forth?
That's... Yep. I got Blue Babe. This Blue's for you.
Right.
The Blues Brothers. The name is Blue, JetBlue. Very hokey.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's hope it keeps going. I had stock in with them for a long time and then got rid of it right after 9/11. And I really shouldn't have done that. Should have hung on to it. What a great company. Gary Wayne, it's I always say it every single show, but it's true. It's amazing when you're having fun how fast 30 minutes goes by. I really appreciate you joining me on the show today. Again, sfloridadj.com is where everybody can find out what's under your entertainment company's umbrella, including the hypnotherapy, including the hypnosis for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I guess, you know, you're still singing now and then. Where do you ever get out and do a gig once in a while?
Yeah. I have a one-man band, and I do a two-man act with John Tillman.
Okay.
People might know him from Modern Music. And we have this tribute thing that we're putting together. It's we're going to be doing any kind of tribute that you want.
I see.
If you give us a month's notice, we'll have that tribute ready.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
Very good idea. That's real cool. Gary Wayne, that's awesome. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for bringing back the memory of sitting in the Rock Casino in 1979 and looking up at the stage in wonder. That was just a great time.
I tell you, Bill, you know, you're like one of my best friends in the world, and for you to tell me that I was an influence in your life couldn't be more of a compliment.
Well, that's awesome. I don't know what other path my life would have taken if I hadn't got into the Rock Casino that night, so I appreciate it, buddy. It's been a great time, and you're another example of those friends that we have that we lose touch every now and then, but every time we get back in touch, it's just like we've never missed a beat, you know?
Yeah, and I just wanted to also thank you for being there at my 50th and singing with me.
Well, I hope you'll return the favor when this boy turns 50, because we're going to probably make a huge party out of that as well.
You can count on it.
All right, man. Gary Wayne on the show today. Thanks again, buddy.
All right, I'll talk to you soon, Bill.
Oh, I got the wrong thing playing here, but that's okay. We can get a little sloppy. This is the music I'm supposed to be playing here. Tuning in again tomorrow for another edition of the Compelling Daily Digital Broadcast, bringing you another person with an interesting story right here at www.BillMurphyShow.com.
Log on each weekday for another edition of The Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH at BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.